Blog Talk Radio.
Help me out a bit on this.
Don't let that flag hit the ground.
Make it rain.
Live from Patriot Studios, this is Soldiers of Patriotism with your host, the chiropractors of conservatism, the madmen of motivation, Michael B. and Uncle Bing. Feel us coming for you, Obama. What about you, Corker? Feel us breathing down your neck, Dewhurst? You rhinos are gone. We're going to stick the dogs on you, Obama. You're done, boy.
Daddy and Uncle Bing.
Hello, Michael, are you there?
I'm sorry about that. Thanks a lot, brother. Yeah, I'm here. All right.
I'm sorry about that, too.
not a problem. Hello. All right, well, let's get on into this. Good Sunday afternoon to you all, and thanks for joining Bing and I today. It is Sunday. That means it is Soldiers of Patriotism time. It looks like we're starting off to a slow start here today, Brother Bing. It's such a beautiful day. I'm sure that people are out there enjoying the Sunday, but maybe some folks will start popping on here before too long, my brother. How's it been going with you over there in Tennessee?
It's pretty good, man. I had a pretty good day. Got some trouble with my tractor, and I upgraded some stuff on Trad-Am. I got some finishing work to do there, but it's been a good day, man.
Cool. Well, I'm thinking we may not do a full three-hour show today. We just may do a two-hour show. Just kind of depends on who jumps on and where we go, but I got a lot to do myself today, and we're going to have guests next week, it looks like, and I've got emails to send out. I met some folks this Friday night when I went to see 2016 Obama's America, and so we got some good Sundays coming up ahead of us. So we might just take it easy today, my brother. I did want to jump on into my editorial here, so if you'll give me just one moment, Bing. Just this morning, I got up early and fixed a fence post. And then I took a ride over to my mom's house to fix her garage door. I wanted to get started early so I could get home and get prepared for today's show. Not knowing what my editorial would be today, but with plenty to talk about, I listened to Brother Bo Cephas, America Can Survive, as I made the drive down a long, winding country road along the southwest rim of Eagle Mountain Lake. I was thinking about Paul Ryan being the VP choice. How disappointed I have been in our nominee, Governor Romney. Thinking about some in my own family that buy into the horse shit perpetrated on us by the left. Thinking about one who even tried to claim unemployment was 8.5% 6 months before Obama took office. I piped him down quickly with facts from the Department of Labor. Never heard a peep back from him. Thinking about my nephew who serves and thinks it's funny that Obama will win re-election because he's too young to understand the consequences of voting for this socialist. Thinking about how my dad, who died shortly after Obama won, said to me, "Son, I feel sorry for my children and grandchildren now that this man has taken office." Thinking about how, if Obama wins and things get worse, as they will do, how I want to rub their noses in it and tell them they are part of the reason America got screwed with no reach around. And just then, the smell of America flooded my senses. The manure of cows, horses, gas rigs, ranches and farms, the sights of the rolling hills and the lake, the isolation on this lonely country road, all the things that make America great. And on this lonely farm-to-market road, just as Hank Jr. belts out, "And America will survive," this lone American flag, tattered and faded from the Texas sun, is waving proud on a rancher's gate entrance where the cattle guard is. Yes, I wept. I teared up with more pride than I can explain as this tightness, this feeling in my chest of more love than I can possibly measure by the conventional measurements of math. It was, to say the least, incredible. Enjoy it with me, patriots. Say a quick prayer for America, and let's check out Bocephus. Hug your kids, kiss your spouse, and thank God for the Tea Party.
We're all together now, we've drawn the line. Our flag is up, the stock market's down, but now we're united from the country to the town. We live back in the woods, you see. Big city problems never bothered me. But the world has changed, and so have I. And America can survive. America will survive. We can plow our fields all day long. We can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Yeah, we have toughed it out a time or two. Ain't too many things these boys and girls can't do. We grow good old tomatoes, we got hometown pride, and America can survive. America is gonna survive. Oh, you can't stop us out, you can't make a run. We're them boys and girls with freedom and fun. We say grace, we say ma'am. If they don't like that, we don't give a damn. We come from the West Virginia coal mines, the Rocky Mountains, and the big city skyline. And we can hit back, and we're gonna be fine. This country can survive. America can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, called me Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land. He's taught him to be a good businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights. I sent him some of Granddaddy Williams' homemade muscadine wine. He was lost like so many in the terrible strife. We're all asking God now, why, oh, why? Tooth for a tooth and an eye for an eye. That's an old slogan we're gonna revive, 'cause America
You can't make a run with them boys and girls that got freedom and fun. We say grace, we say man. If they don't like that, we give less than a damn. We're from North California and South Alabama, and all they've done is unite this whole land. There's no more Yankees and rebels this time, but one united people that stand behind. America can survive. America will survive. America can survive. America will survive.
By the time I got back home, wanting to share this experience with all my friends on Facebook, I posted the basis for today's editorial. Yep, on that drive, having all of those thoughts and listening to Hank Jr., God once again delivered to me today's editorial. What a week, my friends. I went and saw 2016 Obama's America on Friday night with my wife and my mom. Hopefully my spiritual mentor, Padre Smith, will be able to discuss that with me in an upcoming show. This morning, or yesterday, we saw our vice president picked, Paul Ryan, an invigorating move on behalf of Governor Romney. Are we prepared? We better be, because it doesn't matter to the left that for 41 months, we've had unemployment above 8%. It doesn't matter that in the first 2 years of this administration, they had supermajorities in both the House and the Senate and passed every stinking thing they wanted. It doesn't matter that for the first time in our country's history, we have more people on welfare and food stamps than ever before. It doesn't matter that Obama has raped NASA, stripped defense spending, hindered growth in business market, and denied us the Keystone Pipeline that the Canadians will now sell to China. It doesn't matter to the left that Obama wants to lessen our footprint on the world and cause us to bow before the Muslims in the East, finance our debt with China, and break us of the greatness we as a country have enjoyed for so many years. And our grandparents, as they roll over in their grave with disgust, we even have within our own families those that don't seem to be bothered by the road of collapse that this administration is taking us down. Well, I got news for them. I care. And as God is my witness, I will not allow this perfidious, incredulous socialist to take from me my birthright. I will not allow them to steal from my children their future. They can all go to hell because I give less than a damn what they think. As Bocephus just said, no more rebels and Yankees this time, just one united people that stand behind. America can survive. And that's my editorial, and I'm sticking to it. Brother Bean, come on in here for a minute and chat while I dry my eyes.
Oh, brother, you know, we can skin a buck and we can run a trout line, and the country boy will survive. And that's all I got to say.
That's right. And you know what? There's all kinds of country boys. You don't have to be from the north or the south. There's all kinds.
No, there are. There's tons of them, man. I mean, you got Paul Ryan out there noodling, and the press are going, what is noodling? What is noodling? I got people that are conservatives that are going, what is noodling?
Like, they need to go to Oklahoma.
You know, it's funny. You know, it's actually comical to see them go into a hissy fit, is what I call it.
Yeah.
It's just a hissy fit.
It is. It is. But you know, it makes me, I'm not friends with anyone but my mom and my brother and my wife on Facebook. And there's a reason for that. But my mom told me this morning, I went over to fix her garage, and she said, you didn't see what your nephew posted, but he said, now that Ryan has been picked, Obama is sure to win. He, 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 he. And this, he serves in the military. And you know, he's young. He's 20-nothing years old. He still shaves with a wash rag. wet behind the ears as you can possibly be. Extremely intelligent. I mean, he's Memphis intelligent. But he just doesn't get it. That none of them. I mean, anytime you want to talk facts, they want to throw a red herring argument out there. I was speaking to someone in my family the other day, and I said something about unemployment being over 41% for the last 41 months. Well, he throws the straw man argument out there that it was 8.5% 6 months before Obama was president. Well, I didn't want to get in an argument, and so I didn't tell him he was wrong. I just simply said, well, in fact, it was actually 6.1%, and I sent him the text, or I texted him the link to the Department of Labor statistics. I mean, it's all right there. This is the kind of bullshit these people on the left, you know, and this is someone that and I love them to death, don't get me wrong, and I don't want to indicate who it is, but you know, he flies the mantle of being an independent proudly, yet you can tell by everything he says he's really truly a liberal. He says,
yeah,
he's not going to vote for Obama. And I'm
using the facts, man.
Well, that's what they skew the facts. Why do they do that, Bing? Why do they skew the facts? You know, they deny the facts, and that always goes back to that red herring argument. Well, it was getting worse when Bush was in. Well, hell, we all know that Bush spin us into oblivion. But why don't they take responsibility for the, they've been in office for almost 4 years now, and neither the administration, their talking heads, or the people that voted for them, with the exception of my wife that I know of personally, dares to call these people out. I will call Bush out for the big spending Machiavellian neoconservative he was. But he ain't in office anymore. You know what I'm saying, Bink?
Yeah, you can't keep blaming stuff on Bush. There comes a time. Look, the guy's been in office now for 4 freaking years. You can't keep blaming Bush for your problems. And the thing is, Bush, you know, first 2-4 years was pretty good. He started becoming a quasi-socialist at the end. And that's what I kind of don't – I dislike him for that, you know, because he did. He raised spending and so on. But these people don't admit the facts because I don't think they're intelligent enough to actually understand facts.
I
really don't think so. Or they're playing a game or something. But
well,
I don't know, I can't figure them out. I don't try to psychoanalyze people that I disagree with. I mean, there's people that I associate with and there's people that I don't. And this morning we had a conversation about canvassing the neighborhood and so on and putting out the word. And I'm like, you know, there's some places around here that if I go canvassing, I might get my ass shot, you know. And that's just the way it goes around here, you know. And it might be different in different places, but that's the way it goes. I know people come prowling around my house, they might get their butt shot. I don't know if it'd be by me or somebody else, but they might. But the thing is that I think these people are just disillusioned. They've been played by the media for so long. And I don't know. You know, I can't explain it. I think that they're trying to – they don't have the facts, so they have to rely on emotion. And when you rely on emotion to make an argument, you lose every time.
You do. Well, you know, and I've seen two movies now the last 2 weekends, Runaway Slave – and 2016 Obama's American. I think we've got Padre Smith on the line, and I want to get his thoughts on both of these movies, whether he's seen them or not. I know that he knows about them, and I know that he's very good friends with Pastors Broden and Bryant not Marvin Rogers, but Timothy Johnson of Frederick Douglass. And Padre, I've got a Skype call here. I've got a hot mic on a Skype call. Padre, is that you? Padre. Padre, are you on the line? I think that's you, Padre, because I see I have a Skype number with – it's 1111111. Okay, well, while that person – while I'm waiting to see if that person will step back to the mic – You know what gets me, Bing, after seeing both of these movies, and I got to say, Runaway Slave was by and far the better movie of the two, but Dinesh D'Souza made an excellent movie. And he, using Obama's own timelines and everything, he plots out Obama's youth up to becoming the president, and then looks forward as to what we might see in 2016. And what I don't understand, and what I really, really don't understand, I'm having this conversation with yet again this other person in my family, and he's like, well, you agree with these men because they believe the way you do. Well, yes, that's true. I'm not going to deny that. I do agree with them. But and take the case of Runaway Slave. You have a dozen African-American conservatives that are standing up and saying how they feel, which is the way we feel, and this person can only say, well, it's only because I agree with them only because of the way they believe. My question is, why would these folks in their community, in the black community, if you're black, in the Mexican community, if you're Mexican, so on and so forth, why would you stand up and do what has to be done to you within your own community? You have to know that Pastor Bryant has been shunned. His pulpit was taken from him. So to what benefit? My question is, to what benefit if it's not for the truth? And then the question, and here we go again with the red herring argument, was, well, have you ever grown up in that community? I said, well, I don't understand why I would have to either have grown up in that community or have any African-American friends to understand statistical facts. It's not like global warming, because he threw that shit out on me. It's not like global warming where you have a group of scientists that say they have facts that prove it and another group of scientists that say they have facts that disprove it. This is one set of facts that are undisputable. You can't deny what socialism, what the entitlement government has done to people of poverty. And
yeah, you got 500 scientists that agree with global warming, and you got 30,000 that disagree with it. You know, but we were having this exact same discussion this morning, and Pastor Thomas too. You know, and he got into it, and he says, you know, he's shunned by his own people. You know, I mean, you know, his own people, by black people. You know, I mean, he's shunned by his own people. I mean. In a lot of respects. And I sat there and I told him, you know, I said, I worked on a roof in between jobs one time, and I needed some money, and so I had to work on a roof. And I worked on a roof, and there was a lot of black guys walking around, and they was holding their stash, and they was talking about how many white women they had and on the line and so on. And I asked one of them, I said, "What, you know, why are you holding your crotch all the time, man? It just looks so stupid." This was, you know, 20 years ago. And they told me, you know, that's the only thing that the white man ain't done took away from me yet. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. You know?
Well,
seriously. I mean, is that not, you know, and I mean, that just took me, it almost floored me, you know. I just couldn't believe it. I mean, how racist can you be to sit there and say something like that?
Well, you know, you're absolutely.
When your own party has took away more from you than any other group that you can name. Your
absolutely.
Own party. Your own party. Look, what's not the Democratic Party that freed the black people? It was the Republican Party. It was not the Democratic Party. They didn't have nothing to do with it. They hated it. I don't know. I just get pulled up about it. Sit there and try to tell me, well, that's, you know, blame everything from Bush and so on. And, yeah, you know, his first term, I liked him, okay? He was a strong president. His second term, I didn't like him because he started selling out. And,
yeah.
You know, like the movies you were talking about, I wish they would come up around here. The nearest movie theater to me is about, I don't know, 12 miles. And I don't think they're going to play that, so I'm going to have to go to, like, Cookville or somewhere else. But there's also another movie, and you talk about Hank Williams, The Last Ride. Like, this is a good movie. That's about his father, Hank Williams Jr., the Jr.'s father. I hear
yeah.
that's a pretty good movie. And that's one I want to see, too.
I hadn't but seen that one. I did watch The Help last night, actually. Really good show. If you get the opportunity to watch The Help, you got to watch it. But, hey, Bing, speaking of Padre Thomas, let's bring him in and get his take on our rants that we've been going off on and let him go off on a rant. Padre, you there?
What's going on?
Not much, my brother. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm working.
Hello, brother.
Hey, before I go on, I need to ask if it would be okay if I could put a really shameless plug for something.
Brother, it's not shameless. You put in any plug you want. I will gladly and would love for you to. Anybody that's that is in my circle of friends never does a shameless plug. It's a good plug. So go ahead, plug.
Well, let me just put it like this. You guys are well aware. Well, obviously, you're very aware of what I'm doing now. With my ministry and stuff like that. And what I'm not sure if I've ever told everyone is that my ministry that I have, it's we're actually a fully operational 501c3 tax exempt ministry. And I've been doing it for years. What I'm doing, have my radio show tonight where I'm going to be teaching the gospel and playing worship music and just encouraging folks in the word. But one thing that the Lord put on my heart a long time ago to do, which I never did because point blank, it was fear and I couldn't stand, you know, asking. But, you know, with everything I'm doing now, I'm just going to trust the Lord, and I'm just going to ask. On my website, we have our ministry website, we have our radio, and I'm now building another website as we speak for my sacred ministries portion of my ministry, which that is the ministry that I share my life story. I'm going to be traveling and sharing my story, talk about abortion and many other issues that affect us today. But my question is this. To you, Michael, to you, Bing, and to any of the listeners, I was wondering if you all would consider a tax-deductible monthly gift of $10 to support me. And the reason why I say tax-deductible, because, like I said, I'm federally tax-exempt, have all that information, and you can donate through my ministry website, which goes right into my PayPal account, and it's something that's done automatically. And here's the reason why I ask. I have two websites and radio show. I personally don't get paid anything. I don't earn a dime. I mean, and you know, and that's the way it is. In fact, I will not get an income until after my pro-life conference next year. Now, my team of staff people, they will be paid. That's, you know, that's neither here nor there. Now, me personally, I chose to do it that way because for me, it's about the life of the baby and it's about reaching the people with the message. But I was wondering if, because a lot of you, I know a lot of you don't know me, but for those of you who do, I was just wondering if you all would consider supporting my ministry to help me take it to the next level where I can start traveling, you know, doing speaking events and doing other, you know, other things like that. So
what is the website, Padre?
I will pop it in the chat room.
I've been a little derelict on supporting you. We've been so busy with, it's a poor excuse, but every spare dime I've had has been going into, into candidates. But
No. Michael, you told me a long time ago about that, and I have no issue with that. You told me about that, so I'm.
Well, the point I'm making, Padre, is that's kind of behind me now, and what's on my agenda is just doing what I've been doing on the radio show, and I'll do what I can for Mitt and for Paul, but I have a few loose bucks now, and I do want to real quickly as a side note, I do want to talk to you offline about your radio shows, my radio shows. Now that you're really getting involved in this this pro-life thing that's going to be taking you out and abroad, because I have some ideas, but I want to discuss them with you offline. So just kind of keep that in mind.
That's not a problem. So having said that, go ahead, Bing. Sorry.
I was going to say, Thomas, if you've got a banner or two that you would like displayed on Tradamp for free, man, I'll put it up there. Just send it to me.
Oh, okay.
Put it up there. I'll direct it right to your donate site, whatever, you know. Direct it to your website. You know, we're good at stuff like that, man. We put up a lot of banners for people for free that we believe in. We have to believe in them. You know, I believe in you, man. I believe what you're doing is good. It's inspired by God. I believe that. You know, so I believe what you're doing is good. And, you know, if we can show support, then I'm all willing for it, you know.
Well, we're a team. That's the thing. We're a team.
That's right. That's right, man. We have to be. Look, we have to be. We can't sit there and be divided. We have to be a team. We have to be.
I agree 100%. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, Padre, give us. You heard the rant. You heard my opening editorial. You heard Bing's rant. Probably heard what the remarks I made about some of my family members have made and whatnot. I want your thoughts. You're a man. You've been my spiritual mentor for almost a year now. And, a man that I respect. I want your thoughts on everything.
Well, the only way I can answer that is by reading my blog that I wrote last night.
Do it.
And it's called "The Word Is Out, But the People Targeted Are Not Listening." I am guessing somewhere within the walls of Planned Unparenthood, they're celebrating. Why would they be celebrating, you might be wondering? Well, because the battle is over. In Oregon, under Obamacare, a girl as young as 15 years old can receive free sterilizations without her parents knowing. Yet, the abortion supporters and radical feminists want to talk about a war on women. Could any of this have anything to do with the United Nations plan to reduce the world's population to 500,000? If you know anything about Agenda 21, then the answer will be very obvious to you. So I ask the question, why are minorities lining up to be slaughtered? Do you really believe it is in the best interest of the communities to reduce their population bases? In the black communities here in America, the grand experiment has worked. Lyndon B. Johnson said, "We will have those niggers voting Democrat for the next 200 years. Sounds to me like a prophetic warning of things to come. I am sure that LBJ, that champion of the landmark civil rights legislation of 1964, notwithstanding the fact that he, LBJ, filibustered the 1957 civil rights bill that was brought forth by Republicans and Dwight D. Eisenhower. Wealthy black people have sold out their communities. People like Russell Simmons, who made his millions on the back of hatred, the exploitation of women, and the glorifying of gang violence. Not to mention his jacked up rush card with the high user fees. He encourages folks to continue to vote for a man who hates them, who has pandered to every special interest group and friend that he owes favors to. What is missing from that equation is a genuine outreach to the community that he received the greatest percentage of votes from. He didn't speak at the NAACP convention because he was too busy setting for an interview with Harpo. Oprah, if you were wondering who Harpo is. So, with the passing of the Health Care Act and without the full repeal and replacement of Obamacare, you can be assured of one thing, that the population of the black community will continue to rapidly decrease. Let me explain something to those of you who think that abortion isn't a problem because a lot of women in our community are having a lot of kids. There has been close to 20 million black babies slaughtered from the humane act of abortion. I almost spit as I was typing that. It doesn't take into account the hundreds of thousands of black women who were forcibly sterilized without their knowledge. Yet, just like the fateful sheep being led to slaughter, my community has allowed a hatred perpetuated by the lies from the left to blind them to who it is that really want to destroy them and who really has the best interest of the black community in mind. What can I do to help my community and other minorities? Well, I could continue to present the information over and over again. All I can actually do is throw out the lifeline, present information, but if you choose to reject it, disregard my views because I'm a Christian conservative and black, then it's not my fault when you start to drown. Now, this should give you something to chew on.
That is an awesome blog. Can you post the link for that, please, Padre?
Actually, that's the new. I have to build my new blog page because I got locked somehow. I got locked out of my Sacred Ministries Azir website, and that's why I'm having to now pay for actual websites because that was just it was just a preview, so they limited my access, and I'm really irritated about it. So,
Padre, have you tried WordPress? I've got a real nice.
That's who it was through, but I built it through the Microsoft Azure Cloud System, their preview program, and then it locked me out. My controls were locked out. I would go to admin and type in my password, and it says your host has disabled the mail function. So it's like, oh. So they couldn't send my email to reset my password.
Dang. I really would like to see that out. I might need to put you up a temporary guest blog page on my blog site.
Yeah. I'm actually going to write I don't know what I'm going to call it, but my Sacred Ministries blog, I'm going to keep that one to blogging about uplifting things, but my political blogs, like stuff like this, the hard-hitting stuff like this, I'm going to create a whole nother page that way as well. So that's why, I asked for the support because most of this is going to go to that, and because like I said, I don't worry about me. God is providing for me at this point in my life. I get by on very little, but I have a place to live. A good place to live. I pull my own weight, and I'm excited about it.
Well, let me ask you, Padre, how do we as conservatives, okay, set aside our ethnicity? How do we as conservatives beat over the head, or do we not? Do we just present them with the facts and hope that maybe they'll read it? Because they don't seem to be. But how do we get people who want to deny the truth, how do we get them to look at the information that you present or that I present or that Bing or Teresa or anybody that's an information pusher or, you know, anybody that's trying to educate people, I'm not going to get those family members of mine to go watch 2016 Obama's America or Runaway Slave. They're just going to turn around and say, well, those are just some pissed off conservatives. So that's question number one. Question number two, which requires us to bring ethnicity into the equation, which I hate to do because you, my brother, are just a brother conservative. It's right. Not that I'm white and you're black. We're just brothers because we're both conservatives. We both believe in life. We both believe we have the same morals and values. But there are people on the left that will throw in my face, well, you're just propping these people up because they're black conservatives and there's so few of them. Or you're just agreeing with them because they have the same ideology. When I'm thinking to myself, what does Pastor Bryant or Pastor Broden or Thomas Sowell, what do they have to lose by being a conservative from the African American community? I mean, they've got a lot. They have a lot more to lose probably than myself within their own community. And I don't know how to verbalize that when someone says that doesn't necessarily make it the truth. Because in my eyes, Padre, and tell me if I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong, and I'll own up to it. But I have to believe that folks from certain communities who stand up and have these kinds of conservative beliefs are doing so at possibly their own peril. Therefore, that makes it more believable than if I, as a white man, stands up and say it. Does that make sense? Am I making sense or am I not?
You're actually making a whole lot of sense. Here's the thing, and excuse the loud talking in the background because individual in my house has a big mouth and it irritates me. But, here's the thing. You have quite a number of black conservatives who will be silent because they don't want to mess up the status quo or offend family. And then you have me. I could care less about offending family or the black community. Because
you got a loud mouth in your household, Padre? I love you, brother.
Because last time I looked, very few in my community did anything to help shape my destiny.
Well, as I said last night, I think, you know, there's people in my community that have grown up Democratic, you know, all their lives. Their parents were, their grandparents were, everybody was. And they will get shunned.
Right.
They will get chastised. If somebody finds out they're voting Republican or voting independent or Constitution or, you know, any other kind of label, they'll get shunned. They'll get put out of wills and stuff up here. I mean, these people are ruthless. And it's insane. I don't get a lot of it, you know. And I can't relate to what you're going through or what you've gone through, but I've been around enough people to know that there is a definite disconnect with voters and with you know, different areas of the country. You know, you can go to the other areas of the country, and it's not a big issue. But you come up here to Tennessee or something like that, and you know, there's counties I don't even want to go to. I don't want to care to go to because, you know, I might be found dead sometimes.
Right.
And that's just the way it is.
Padre, I'm sorry, real quick, Bing. Padre, either Padre or Bing, do one of y'all have the radio show on? Because we're getting an echo.
That's not me. I'm muted, so.
No, I ain't got the radio on.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry about that, B. Go ahead. And while you're talking, I'm going to go ahead and bring I'm going to open up the mics for Boyd and Kurt, and let's start bringing in our panelists as we're talking. So, Rick or Bing, go ahead, and then as soon as you get done, let's bring Boyd in, and then Kurt, and pull them in, and let's get the round table going. I think we got a lot to talk about today, Uncle Bing.
Yeah, we got the nominee. And the thing I wanted to ask the Padre here is, in the black community, are they just not listening to the message, or are they not hearing the message?
They hear the message and they shut it down.
Why is that, do you think? Why? I mean, are they so brainwashed that they can't? I can't fathom that,
Right.
I just can't fathom. There must be another explanation, It's the same thing like the Jews vote Democratic. I can't understand that.
Yeah, that's another one that I don't understand either. But, hey, I look at it like this. That's what they want to do. And I got to send a message. Well, I got to say a message to Teresa real quick. Hey, Teresa, could you spread on the tweet? And I'm building the website now. It's not published yet, but my new Sacred Ministries website.
Teresa, you're live.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can do that. No problem.
It's still a part of my ministry, but it's I'm going to have my blogs on there, and it's also going to be my web page about me. So if people ever want to contact me and bring me in for speaking engagements and all that stuff, this will be how you do it instead of just having a blog through WordPress. So it's going to be an actual fully functional website, and the same background that I had with Jesus Christ in the skyline of Kansas City is going to be the same one that I have on this page. So, yeah, that's all I wanted to say. So,
Padre, I wanted to follow up with Bing's question real quick, and then we've got Teresa and Kurt, and I'm opening up all the mics. We're going to go into roundtable. I've got all of the best panelists you could have are on the show today. But I wanted to follow up with what being said insofar as about are in the black community, are they not hearing or are they not paying attention? I have to say, I have noticed over the last 3 or 4 years the amount of folks in both the Hispanic and the black community seems to be growing like towns.
You fade now.
And there's an echo.
Yep, hang on. Let me shut some mics down here for a minute.
Not me, I know that.
Okay, is that better?
Yes.
Okay, so the amount of conservatives that I'm seeing in the Hispanic and in the black communities, they seem to be growing like towns. Now,
oh, you're fading out again.
All right, hang on. Let me try that. Okay, let me try it now. So what I was saying, Padre, and I had to mute you for just a minute, Padre, because I had to mute everybody for just a minute. So I've been noticing over the last several years that in the African-American community and in the Hispanic community, we're seeing more and more conservatives within those communities come forward. Now, is that because of the circle of friends that I run with? Or, in fact, are we seeing more and more conservatives starting to come forward from those communities? And are we starting to see a pattern that maybe it takes 20 years? I don't know. But are we starting to see a pattern that is going to actually probably start bringing folks from those communities more towards the conservative side? What are your thoughts on that, Padre?
Well, here's the issue. People in the black community are already conservative.
Yeah.
They just don't know it. And for them, it's pretty sad when you have individuals who are conservative by nature, but because they have been predisposed to hate Republicans with no basis in fact, then there's nothing you can do about it. Because there is a lot of hatred. I hate to say it like that, but it is. There's a lot of hatred there. A lot.
Well, I really, you know, that really saddens my heart, Padre, because, you know, I think in all of this, you know, no matter what happens in November, no matter anything, I think moving forward, this has been a good year for me. I've made a lot of friends from all kinds of communities. And, you know, I used to be a little bashful about speaking my heart, about being a conservative, because I got tired of being called a racist.
Right.
But I met a lot of good people from all communities that believe the same way I do and say, Mike, you're not a racist because you're a conservative. Pastor Bryant, watching his movie last weekend, I think it was Marvin Rogers it was the fella from Alabama that he was interviewing in that park. I forget his name. That said, the definition of conservative it was Timothy Johnson, said the definition of conservative has been misrepresented. That's why he calls himself, like you, a Frederick Douglass Republican.
Actually, I am. How do I put this? We are Frederick Douglass Republicans, and that's K. Carl Smith, by the way.
Okay, thank you for the correction, Padre.
K. Carl Smith, he started the Frederick Douglass Republicans, but he came out of the Frederick Douglass Foundation, of which I am the Missouri State Chapter President. So, Timothy Johnson is the national chairman and founder of the Frederick Douglass Foundation. So, you had it right. To a point.
Yeah.
But
all these names, I get hard pressed to remember them all.
Right.
Well, Padre, let's go ahead and pull in here some other folks. I want to get some other folks on. I'm going to leave you on hot. We're going to go ahead and pull in, and being you're hot too. Let's go ahead. We're going to start with Boyd, the Alaskan. Let's pull him in. And Kurt, we're going to pull you in just a minute, so stand tight, buddy. Boyd, jump on in here. Guys, I'm going to step away from the mic for a minute, so y'all take over the show, okay?
Yep.
Roger Wilco.
You know, it's really strange that this subject came up, because it was like yesterday in the shower, where I do some of my deepest thinking. I was thinking about what I would have said standing in front of the NAACP, as Duker as Romney did. Anyway, looking back on this, when the slaves were emancipated and stuff, you know, it's one of those things where after they were freed and everything was left for them, they stayed on the plantation. you know, where they where they'd lived all the time. And you know, it would to me would have to have been one of those where because that's where they lived, that was their home. They stayed there. It was familiar territory. Since that time, the Democrats seem to have rounded the slaves all back up and put them back on the plantation. And over the generations, they have become comfortable with their status in life, you know, in the projects, in the welfare system. There are quite a few that have busted out of there, you know, that have gone out and got an education and learned the ways of the American way. But there's a whole slew of them out there that have not have accepted their status in life and seem to want to, how should I say, seem to want to stay there.
Right.
And had I been in front of the NAACP, I would have looked them all dead square in the eyes and said, you are the leaders of those communities. You are the ones that need to go out there and make the change with your education to get them out of their bondage.
Right.
And to this point in time, they have done neither of that. They have accepted their status in life because as a leader, they have in and of themselves become prosperous on the backs of the rest of their people.
Right. Right.
And, you know, I think I would have gone in there and chastised them. I wouldn't have won any votes or anything, but I would have spoke my mind.
Right.
Well,
no,
you got Louis Farrakhan, you got Al Sharpton, you got Jesse Jackson, you got all the poverty pimps that run around and want to keep... They want to try to mystify, and you know, it's not really to me a black and white issue because I see this thing going on with white people too. You know, they become slaves to the government. They become beholders of the government.
Right.
The government gives them everything. And they turn around and they sit there and they know exactly the advantages and exactly how to take advantage of the government.
Right.
And, you know, but what kills me the most to see intelligent African-Americans that are out there that are trying and they get called racist terms by their own people, Uncle Toms and all this other kind of stuff. And, you know, That's what just kills me, man. It's like these people are intelligent. They're moving. They're trying to move up the ladder, and they keep getting pulled down.
Well, you gotta look at it like this. And this is how I look at it. The Jacksons, Sharptons, including the NAACP, they are actually. I don't know what the exact term would be, but I would call them the house boys of the plantation owners. Those were the slaves that kept the rest of the slaves in line.
Right.
They keep enslaving their own people. And the thing is, they have to break loose of that mold. They have to get out of there. And like I said, it's just not black people. It's white people. It's not African Americans, it's white people too. I see this every day, man. It just annoys me, you know, that people sit there and say, okay, we're going to live off the government. There was a white family in Florida at one time, 10 generations. 10 generations were on welfare. None of them had a job. So it's not a white and black issue. This is a thing that is basically the government is propping them up, and they take advantage of it. And they know how to maximize that potential. And they keep going after it because the money's there. I was in a store. I was in a dollar store, okay? And I have, seen some woman in there, and she's talking to the clerk, and she's, like, all tattooed out and all that kind of stuff and trashy looking. And she goes, her daughter walked by. I must have been about 14. She goes, there goes my bread money right there. There's my bread money. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And she's proud of it. She's absolutely proud of it. And this is the thing we have to get away from. We have to, it used to be when I grew up, we had food stamps. And there's people, and I guarantee that there are people that need to be on food stamps and need to be helped and that kind of thing. And I have no problem with helping them. But when you sit there and you make it where it's not a guilt trip anymore, then they'll utilize their advantage. They utilize the system, and that's a sorry fact of the matter.
Well, one of the things I see also, in the welfare community is they're pimping the women, and it's like for a woman to get welfare and food stamps and stuff for her family that she has. There can't be a male living in the household. So
no, but they don't declare them as such.
Yeah, but
so they just take their money and they don't declare them on taxes.
Here's the thing, every time the woman would need a little more money or whatever, she goes out, spreads her legs, has another kid, and gets more money. That's your bread ticket. And,
yeah, bread baby.
Yeah.
So, that's another $800 a month.
Right.
That we're giving them out of our money, out of our taxpayer money. They're not paying taxes, and at the end of the year, they actually get back money because of earned income credit and because of all these other loopholes that we got in the tax code. And we need to get, that's one thing with Paul Ryan, I think. If Romney will get rid of the loopholes, we don't need nothing. No loopholes, none. But take the tax base back to where it should be. In other words, you have a house, you don't, declare mortgage interest and all that kind of stuff off it. You just, sit there and get that back off your taxes, that you pay, at your employer. But I don't see that happening. I really don't see that happening.
If I can real quick, Boyd and Ming, let me jump in here to what Boyd was just saying. Well, in fact, what both of you were. And the Padre alluded to this. And I've got you on mute right at the moment because there's some background noise coming from your feed. But, and this has nothing to do with ethnicity, but you're absolutely right. And this was one of the very obvious and telling parts of Runaway Slave that just almost nearly floored me in 57 when the Padre talked about it. Well, they talk about it in Runaway Slave. In 57, Dwight Eisenhower tried to pass the Civil Rights Act of 1957. And it was filibustered by John F. Kennedy and Lyndon Baines Johnson, only to be brought back in 64 for the 65 Civil Rights Act. And what they told what they told folks in poverty, which was predominantly African-American community, was that we will take care of you, we will feed you, we will house you, but there can't be a man in the house. Now, you could graph, and it was, I think, Thomas Sowell that actually, whom is a man that is one of my heroes, said basically, I can't remember the exact quote, but since the welfare state of the 60s, it has destroyed our community. And you can graph by taking the father out of the household, you can grab. I guarantee you, crime would follow the same exact path as the rise of those folks in poverty. It would follow a similar upward momentum move on a graph. And that's what, that is why pastors Bryant and pastors Broden, and all of these other gentlemen, are saying that the real racist are, and Herman Cain, the real racist is the Democrat Party. They're the ones to retain power. How do you retain power? You retain power by bringing people down, taking away their faith, taking away their means to be a success, and making them complacent with having everything handed to them, then they're going to continue to vote for you. And here's my question to the whole entire panel, all right? Are we too late, Boyd? Are we too late, Boyd? Because we've now got almost half of our country dependent on welfare and food stamps, or not paying taxes, or getting money back for taxes that they didn't pay in the first place and earned income. We now have a culture that is dependent upon, and the left, you got to hand it to them. They were very good in what they did since the 60s. And I don't know the pastor's, I don't know the professor's name at Columbia, but there was a professor there, a mentor of Obama's, that said the way to bring America down is to make her dependent on the government, to break her, to break the back of business, to break her military, to reduce her footprint in the world, and you will inadvertently create the America that the communists want.
That was Cloward and Pivens.
There, yeah.
It is not too late, but it's an intertwined mess that has to be undone right now to change the system. And, you know, it's like we got to get the people off the welfare rolls. Well, you know what? You can't get people off the welfare rolls if we don't have jobs out there. So the first step in all of this is to get the jobs out there and available so the people can go out and earn a living and feed themselves. The next part is when the jobs are out there and nobody's filling them, is to start, you know, hitting the welfare rolls and just taking their ability for a free ride to get it away, along with the education of those people so that they can take those jobs. You know, even if it's just on a factory line, you know, on the assembly line, you know, that's a job that that I never, ever wanted to do, was be an assembly line worker. And I was fortunate enough to find a job, get a bit of an education, OJT on it, that I am not working an assembly line. But there's a lot of people out there that were happy working an assembly line. At least they had a job.
Well, there was a story told to me that, you know, there's always got to be somebody to screw the lids on the jars, okay? And as Michael pointed out, you know, as far as Thomas Sowell, he said, as for the scary stories politicians tell, in order to keep the entitlement programs going, as long as we keep buying it, they will keep selling it. And that's poignant.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's pertinent. And as long as we keep buying it, they'll keep selling it. When they keep, you know, when they want the entitlements going and all that kind of stuff, and as long as people keep buying it, they'll keep selling it.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know how to get people out of that mentality. I don't know. I mean, you know, other than beating them over the head, I just don't know. There's no way to do it because they've got the system down. They know exactly how the system operates. They actually put out pointers and memos that you can get online or you can print out or they send to you on how to get food stamps, on how to get free entitlements. And the thing is, the spending has got to stop.
Well, yeah. But, you know, one of the downfalls that I've seen was when they started the war on poverty and started up the welfare system. Prior to that, I knew of nobody that starved to death or went without clothes or anything because the local community took care of them. And I grew up in that sort of climate.
Yeah, the churches or neighbors or whatever chipped in and helped out.
Right.
We used to call that 1,000 points of light.
And the thing was, that was before 1,000 points of lights too.
The thing is that
you know, the local community knew the people who needed the help, and they helped them. Sometimes they made a decision not to help because of the acts of the people themselves. I mean, I remember families who, you know, the old man was a drunk and go out and spend all their money boozing and everything. And, you know, there was no money for the kids or for food or anything like that. And in a case like that, the church and some other groups in the town would make sure that the wife and the kids had food and clothing. They would take the wife to the store. They would buy food. No money was put in the wife's hands. They would, you know, get donations of clothes. The kids wore, you know, secondhand clothes, but, you know, they were closed. They weren't the high fashion stuff or anything like that of the day. They were functional pieces of cloth. And when it came down to the old man, he received nothing. You know, they would ostracize him. You know, the wife of the community became the husband, you know, and took care of the family. The innocent people of this guy's, you know, abandonment. We didn't require that he didn't live at home or anything like that, but, you know, most likely he was already, you know, going to jail or other things for, you know, just being a butthead. But,
That was the good old days. That don't pertain anymore. You got rules against that. You know, you got laws against that. It's just, you know.
Here's the big argument on the welfare thing. Was they felt it was, it was another attack on Christianity. It was one of those deals where the libs said, you should not be allowed to force a man to come in to get food out of a soup kitchen and have to say a prayer before he eats the food. You know, well, it's like this. If the guy is hungry, he will go in, he will say a prayer just to get the food, whether he believes the prayer or not. He will do that for his own survival. And they said that was wrong. And that was bullshit. If people are taking their money, giving it to the church to feed people, and the one little stipulation, and this was always a stipulation, like if you go to Sally Ann or anything like that, it was, you know, here's your food and here's a prayer.
See, and I happen to be of the ill, and I agree with exactly what you're saying. And here's the thing. And here's where the left has been successful. And they started this in the 60s. And they started by taking God out of public square. You see, because I happen to believe, and I think the Padre could elaborate on this more. I'll bring him in just a second, but I also want to pull Kurt in. But I believe when you take God out of the public square, and you make it such as that, If you're a soup kitchen and the government steps in and says, well, you're more than welcome to give food to people that need it, but you can't make them say a prayer, what you're doing is you're taking away from people something that gives them, whether they want to admit it or not, it gives them hope. It gives them faith. It gives them something to strive for. You take that away from people, what is left? The government.
Well,
the government is making
themselves
God.
Right, and why are they doing that in the first place? These people are out there sitting there selling their souls. You know, not selling their souls, but I mean they're sacrificing their themselves to provide for other people. I don't think it's that unruly to ask for a prayer. And I think it's unruly for the government to sit there and say that we can't.
You know what I want to say to the atheist?
I mean?
I want to say to the atheist, you might have successfully taken God out of public square, but you've successfully brought the government as the new God into the public square. So what did you really win?
Yeah, how's that gonna do for you?
How's that working
out
for you?
Yeah, there are no atheists in foxholes.
Exactly. And I'll guarantee you, I've been in one. Let's bring Brother Kurt in here, guys. Kurt, come on in here.
Hey, Michael. Hey, this is getting really interesting here. And there have been a lot of things said that are true, and you're getting at the heart of the problem here. When you take God out of American life or any other community or nation, whichever way you want to label it, you know, all you have to do is look back to Europe and the Middle East and other nations over there where they have succeeded in taking God out of the public square, I believe as somebody put it there a while ago, it immediately started to go downhill. And of course, doing that is one of the, I forget the number, what is it, 47 declared goals of the Communist Party that's so famous around now.
Yeah,
somebody
it was 50, but yeah, there's 40, it was 52, I think, and there's 47 already declared.
Okay, whatever the number, you know the list I'm talking about.
Yeah, I wrote it.
But they proved it. They proved that in Europe and during World War II when the Germans did what they did over there under the Hitler regime. And this works. So if you can do that, it works. It starts to break down the country. But there's another aspect of this that I've been thinking about while I listen to you guys talk there. And here he is. I'm going to go psychological on you here for a minute.
I love the smell of psychological in the afternoon.
Especially from you, Kurt.
Okay. All right. Someone has spoken about here just a minute ago about, you know, when you take the hope that the belief in God and the belief in Jesus Christ provides for people, when you take that hope away from them, then there's not much left. But there is one thing that's a basic part of human nature. One of the hardest things, and I want each one of you to think about this in relation to your own self, one of the hardest things to do in life is to admit that I was wrong. Is this not true? To say I was wrong is hard to do.
It's very hard.
And the further down the socioeconomic ladder a person happens to be, when an event comes around in their life that they have to, in their own heart and in their own mind, they know I was wrong. But to verbalize it, to admit to the rest of the world that you were wrong, it's far more difficult. It's one of the hardest things there is to do. It's like, that's harder than saying I'm sorry. You can say I'm sorry to someone, and you placate them and yourself a little bit at the same time when you verbalize that I'm sorry. You've done something to make yourself feel better. But when you admit I was wrong, you have not done anything to make yourself feel better for the most part. And here's what's happening. Regardless of what socioeconomic level they're in, because I can give you some for instances on this, but in the black community and in the white community, because I deal with some from both sides in this area here. Most of you, I'm sure I know, we have a weekly column in the local paper here, and we have bloggers on the online blog, which many of the Trad-Am folks have seen, and the comments that they make. We're fighting both sides here. But the black community does not want to say, I was wrong. The white community that voted for Obama does not want to say, I was wrong. And I don't know, I'm getting feedback on my phone now, if anybody can hear.
Yeah, I'm getting it too.
Okay, thanks, Michael. But to admit that they were wrong, and this goes doubly for the black community, they so wanted the first black president ever in the United States of America to be their hero. They wanted it really badly, and I understand that. I totally get that. That makes it doubly hard for the black community to say, you know, we were wrong about this guy. To me, the ironic part of it is that unless the rumor that Barack Obama's real father is Frank Marshall Davis, unless that's true, then his real father is an Arab, not a black man. I don't know. We probably will never know the true answer to that. But then we also know that part of his heritage is half of it is white. Nobody deals with that aspect of it. But it all comes back around to the same thing of saying, I was wrong. It's very hard to do. It's hard to see your hero the man that you wanted your hero to be, or you wanted him to be your hero, to see him go down in flames. That's hard as well. That, I think, is why a lot of both communities, black and white, we got your yellow dog Democrats down here in the South, and you got them in other places too. I know this, you know. And that's something I'm going to address soon in a column to the local paper, is the Republicans versus Democrat issue. And I'm going to make some more people mad at me. I really don't care. I'm just going to tell it like it is. But to let all these issues gum up the works and get in the way of dealing with life realistically, it's bordering on insanity. So those things need to be laid aside. Padre, if you could address that issue in a light that could make me more knowledgeable about how to deal with it, if there's anything that I could do to deal with it to help, anything that I can do to help, I want to. But it's
I've got the Padre on live, so address that question to him, Brother Kurt.
Okay, Padre, did you hear what I said? How is it that we bring the members of the black community to the point of being able to say, I was wrong about this guy, you know, and stand up and do something different, because this is not working?
Well, you don't, unfortunately. What I ran into is I was trying to, you know, present the information and say, hey, you got to get this, you got to get this, you got to get this. And I came to this realization that sometimes you have to practice tough love. And in this case, the tough love being, you present the information, you leave it at that, but then at the end of the day, if they don't heed your warning, you've done all you can do, and you have to move on. Now, if someone in the midst of a tumultuous situation, they see the errors of their ways and they cry out for help, then you say, hey, okay, you be there to lift them up. But if they want to continue to plunge head first over the cliff while you're saying stop. In fact, you're standing in front of the edge, and yet they step around you and still plunge over. There's nothing you can do about that.
Sometimes there is no answer yes. to the problem then, in other words.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, there is none. I'm going to bring Scott in here. He's been on hold for quite a long time. Hopefully he's still there. No, he left. But I don't know. Like I said, you know, the race issue and all that kind of stuff that they keep bringing up all the time, people keep bringing up, I guess. It to me, is not a big deal. I don't look at it as a big deal. I don't look at the polls. I don't look at all the other things. I look at what is concerning me, what is concerning the rest of the people in my neighborhood, in my country, in my county, in my city, in my district, that kind of thing. But it's just confusing sometimes to understand how some people vote.
Right.
Some people actually, you know, will sit there and lay down their lives for somebody that is really just pimping them out.
Right.
I just don't understand that. And Padre, I mean, you're involved in that, man. And I'm sitting there going, I don't, you know, and I'm involved in that too, you know, on the white side. I mean, I've got people on the white side that probably might still vote for Barack Obama, and I'm trying to sit there and go convince them not to, but they say, well, if I don't vote Democrat, I'll be, you know, ostracized, or I'll be this and that. And I'm like, you know, why do you care, really?
Yeah, exactly. Who cares?
Who cares? Why don't you speak your mind? Why don't you do something on your own? Get off your butt, you know? Do something
right.
on your own for a change.
Exactly.
I don't get that mentality. I don't understand where it comes from.
Well, go ahead.
I think part of that goes back, it's another aspect of what I talk about while I go about people admitting they're wrong. For the same token, I think my mind just jumped the track on what I was going to say there. It's a senior moment. to do that, to do anything different, they can't bring themselves to turn to a different outlook. Again, that's another form of admitting that I was wrong, and it's hard. It's hard for them to do. You're back to yellow dog Democrats again, is what it amounts to.
Well, that might be true, but like Einstein said, you know, doing the same thing over and over, the definition of insanity, and expecting a different result.
Yeah,
you know, I mean. You know, we have to somehow educate these people.
Yeah.
All of them.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Let me add. I just realized what I've been saying. I mean, I say it intentionally, but I want you to. There are yellow dog Republicans too. I'm dealing with some of them, you know, on a continuing basis now. And this fight we've got going on here in Tennessee over Governor Haslam and his appointments, and I've had some Republicans to turn around and walk away from me because of my position on that. Now those folks are yellow dog Republicans, so it's not peculiar only to Democrats.
Oh no, it isn't. No, it's the Republicans too. And there's a lot of them that need to go. Alexander needs to go. You know, Corker should have gone, but, you know, we couldn't get rid of him. You know, that's just the way the ball bounces. But these people need to go. They're not upholding their sacred honor of the Constitution. They're not upholding their duties as elected officials. they care more about themselves and their votes than they care about anybody else.
Well, that goes back. Do you remember that? Remember that blog that I posted a few weeks ago? I'm trying to think of the name of it now. Daniel something. It's a Jewish last name. The title is called "How the Left Wins Elections."
Yeah.
Okay. Everything that you need to know about that aspect is contained in that one comment on that blog. Sultan something. Okay, I'll have to find it because that needs looking at. We need to look at that probably every week in one sense of the word. But the heartbeat of that article was, you know, how does the left win elections? When you have demographics in a given area, which those demographics will not support the election of your chosen candidate, what do you do about it? You change the demographics. And how are they
right.
being changed?
That's what they did.
They're being changed. They're being changed by the shifting of huge numbers of people from one area to another so that they can win a particular House seat. It gets done in the form of redistricting right here in Tennessee. And again, I guess every state in the union, you shuffle numbers around to change the demographics so that you can win. Well, they've been playing this game successfully for so long now. They've gotten very adept at it. And this is what
yeah,
we have to look at.
It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out, you know. I think we understand that. I don't know what to do about it. You know, they just keep, you know, legislators just keep doing what they want to do, you know, as far as to get into power, because that's what they want. Danny Sos, you there?
Brother,
yeah.
Danny,
I'm here. Sos? I had on mute.
Yeah, interject, brother. You've been on hold for a while.
And sister and Mama Bear TB.
Yeah.
Every group, everybody's got to have Mama Bear, and we've got ours in this Teresa Bresky.
Well, I believe that things are really going to change this election. My mother-in-law, who's never voted for a Democrat other than Democrat in her whole life, is not going to be voting that way this time over the forcing the Catholic Church to and the contraception issue. And I think this has really shook up a lot of people. And it's probably not even showing up in the polls, but it will in the polling booth.
Teresa.
Oh, boy. I mean, it's a big topic to cover, and I'm just going to go back.
We're left with a lot there.
Yeah. I'm just going to go back to the question that you posed, Michael. Is it too late to change anything? I believe is the way, you know, is it too late to change anything? And I heard Bing bring up the same thing that I'm going to bring up, and it's not a problem that's specific to a culture or a color or, you know, a creed. What I believe, you know, I mean, we're working this problem from the bottom up. And you know, and my belief is, you know, just from, you know, what I've read and knowing history and reading the Bible and, you know, just different spirituality type, you know, readings and things, is what it really comes down to is knowing how to pray on the human condition. And it might play itself out differently in different cultures. You know, it only takes a little bit of time to get somebody dependent on welfare, whether you're, you know, whatever color you are. I mean, they really make it impossible to get off of it once you're on it. And, it just zaps any productive, you know, person, you know, or that you might have left in you out of you, because it's so easy to stay, you know, in a house with some food, with a few, TV, cable, whatever, phone. I mean, you're not taking expensive trips, but you're getting by, and that's all some people care about. You know, and it's just, it's not hard to take that initiative out of a good majority of people with, you know, how everything's being co-opted. The language is co-opted. History books are being, you know, changed because the language has been, you know, co-opted. Education system, God forbid you try to tell any of these indoctrinated children that are coming out of the public school system that this really isn't the way things are. I mean, you're looked at like you have three heads. So.
Well, it's a bribe, isn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like if you know how to manipulate that human condition, and that's why the Alinsky tactics are so effective, is because they know how it attacks your sensitivities towards being, you know, marginalized, you know, isolated and attacked. Of course, people are going to react negatively and make themselves look stupid. So, I mean, that's why these things are so effective, is because they prey on the very essence of human nature.
And, TB, I think you're onto something there, and I just want to add to that. And that's why, you know, that's probably why I'm becoming a horse's ass with a lot of people nowadays. I mean, whereas I used to be polite, and if someone said, well, this, that, or the other, okay, fine, whatever you think. You know, I was polite and just wormed out of it. I don't do that anymore. And I find myself becoming very defensive and becoming quite the horse's ass. And saying, no, you're wrong. You're wrong, and I'm not going to let you do that to me. I'm not going to let, first of all, I'm not going to let you insinuate I'm a racist. I'm not going to let you play on my sensibility of having a big heart, because that's what we as conservatives have done, and that's why we've lost for so long. Do you think, TB?
I believe it is, because, I mean, you look at it, you know, the whole thing has been going on for about 80 years now. They started with higher education and infiltrating, you know, the, you know, upper education system of professors being indoctrinated into this, you know, communist mentality or what have you. I mean, you can look it up online. I mean, it goes back 80 plus years, and it just slowly trickles down into society. It's been going on for nearly 100 years now, and it's just gotten to the point where it's like, if we really don't stand up and do anything, it's going to be too late. But we're at that point where if we don't do anything right now in this next election cycle, it's pretty much going to be over, because when you have over half the population in the wagon and it's only a couple people pulling it, then that's, you know, there's no, that's the point of no return, because your voter base is locked in at that point for more of this socialist, you know, government type of policies being passed and supported. So, I don't know. I mean, it's at that point.
That 48% that I mentioned earlier, that does not take into account the illegals.
Right.
So it might be a lot more than that. And we sit there and just candor to them, and we placate them and that kind of thing. And the thing is that, you know, we need to start demagnetizing, get rid of them. Mm-hmm. We need to stop creating jobs. We need to, the government needs to stop. And I don't know why we are creating incentives for illegal immigrants to come here, and we're giving them school, just sign up for school and, you know, you'll get, you know, voting ID. It don't take a rocket scientist to figure that one out either. You know, why are you doing that?
You know, I want to be.
Go
ahead, Big.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I want to own up to a deep-seated thought that I've had for a long time now. I'm going to own up to it. I'm going to share it. I want to open up the mics here. I'm going to share it with all of y'all, and I'm going to take the blame. I'm going to stand on my own two feet here, but I want to admit something. I want to confess. I want to make a confession to all of y'all. Unfortunately, I have Padre on the line with me. But I have finally gotten to the point where, yes, I'm going to continue to fight. I've still got some fight left in me. But I'm at the point now where, frankly, and I hate to say this, I'm embarrassed to say it, but I sometimes feel like, you know, I think we just need to go ahead and let everything go into the shitter, and let them win, and then we can sit back and we can point the finger and finally say, see, we told you so. We told you if you took us down this freaking road, this is what was going to happen. Damn it, I'm so goddamn pissed off.
I think he threw his headset off.
Hey, Michael. Michael.
Yeah, the
hey, Michael.
The thing is, we can't give up.
Right.
The whole thing is we have to keep on going, okay? There's going to be a time, maybe, that we not give up, but we sit there and say, you know, we've had enough. We've had enough, and we're not going to take it no more. And I think that's where Michael is right now, and that's where a lot of people are right now. I know I am close to that.
I'm sorry about that.
Oh, that's fine, Michael. You know, look, man, this is hurting a lot of people. This, you know, in different ways, you know. So, you know, don't worry about it, man.
Well, I just, it makes me sick that...
Hey, Michael.
Yes, sir, Padre.
Let me give you a little perspective of something. What if when the doctors were telling my mom because I was a baby, what if... when they told my mom that I would never walk, that I'd be mentally retarded and all this stuff, she would have just threw her hands up and gave up and said, phew. Because let me tell you something. I know what it's like to give up. I've done it. There's been times over the years where I've sat with butcher knives. I'm pressed against my chest, trying to decide whether I was going to push it in or did I really want to live. It's okay to have those feelings because God knows, been there, did that, still do. But at the end of the day, you know that you always must do the right thing. Because look at it like this, and it's something I think it was Being that was talking earlier about people who have, you know, been on food stamps, you know. I get food stamps. I have to because of my income levels and because of what I'm working on, which my income will not come until after my conference next year. So essentially, guys, I live on less than $200 a month. And that doesn't come from government. That's actual cash that I get. And I could have been discouraged in doing this because we have to raise $1 million for this conference. And guess what? I have been connected with some great team members. And that's what happens when you plow ahead and you don't give up. Does it suck not having a steady income at this point? Yes, but because I have a goal in sight, it is worth the fight and it's worth working for. It is worth it. Now, some doors have been open to me, and Teresa knows about this, because I shared with her and Michael the other day. But
when you work towards a goal and you share and people believe in what you're doing, you will find favor, no matter how tough it may seem. So keep your head up and hang in there. That's all I have to say.
Well, and God works in mysterious ways, you know.
Yep.
We don't know what way he's working in, but we know that he works for us. And
right.
The thing is that to keep on plugging along, that's the whole thing we have to do. We're just grunts. We're grunts in this battle. We are. And we have to keep on grunting along, you know?
Yeah, I let my emotions get the best of me. And, you know, maybe I just needed to, but I... And I will keep fighting. I mean, God knows that you know this is one crusty old 82nd Airborne guy here. I take two salt tablets and drive on, but I get fed up. I get tired. I'm worn out. It's been a long year, and sometimes you gotta. Sometimes in my mind, I just close my eyes and I think, what if we just temporarily let them win and let everything go to hell in a handbasket? Then maybe our point will be made. But we can't. I understand that we can't let that happen, and I won't. I could not spy and allow that to happen.
Hey, Michael.
You know, on the other side, Michael, if we had a utopia, we would not have nothing to talk about, right?
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so we've got to have the evil regime, Borg, and that kind of thing. So, you know, don't worry about it, man. It gets to everybody.
No.
It's got to me over the last year.
Boy,
go ahead, Scott. Hey, Michael.
Yes, go ahead.
All right. You claim 82nd Airborne. That's
yes, sir.
That's fine. And that's good. Now, if you remember from those days, every once in a while, you guys had to be pulled off the line. Why? Because you're getting to the point where you are today. You need to be pulled off the line, sit down, take a break, get some sleep, get some rest, get recharged, refueled, get your ammo back together, get all your gear back together, and then you go back out up against the wall again.
Yes, sir.
While another unit is out there beating their heads up. You know, so you may be at the point right now where you just need to be pulled off the line for an extended period of time, get dressed up, geared up, re-geared, and then hit the line with new vim and vigor.
Yeah, you know what? I've done that in the past. I've taken a week or two off and just make myself stay off the computer, and I always come back with a lot more vigor.
I'm sure that you've seen guys break down.
Oh yeah.
When they hit their wall, and there's nothing you can do for them except get them off the line.
Yeah.
And you know, if you're at that point, then maybe that's what you ought to do. Take a break.
Well, yeah, you're right. I do, and I kind of did. I just I don't know. I was confessing some deep-seated stuff there, but I have taken a break the last week. I have not been as active, and I'm good. I appreciate that, brother. I am. But you're right. I have had to take a few people to the rear, as we would say, and had to take the moment at the hospital and come in. They hit the ball a little too hard. So you do. Sometimes you got to take a break, and you got to regroup.
I muted some of the lines here because we were getting bad echo, man. But
yeah, I think that
I don't
was
know who's caused.
But yeah, hey. So anyway, Sister Teresa, come on in here. I kind of stepped all over you. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. You know, the whole thing is just it's like sometimes you have to be broken down to have a breakthrough. You know. It's just how life is sometimes, and it's just a reminder that you got to take some time to recoup and all that. So, but I'm finished with what I have to say, so I'm just listening along with you guys. So,
well, we're so glad you're with us, Mama Bear. You you help keep us a little bit on the
same. Good player, girl.
Thank you.
Well, let's go ahead and let's get some more folks back in here and roundtable a little bit, Bing.
All right, bruh.
Hey, let's pull Padre in here. I think Padre's got something he wants to say to everybody.
Okay, I actually have to go get ready for my show, which you guys will miss because you'll still be doing your show, but catch it in archives. Anyway, in the midst of the entire show, while you guys were talking and I was discussing, I was just listening, I just built an entire website. So,
groovy.
Drop the link in the, and it's my blog, is my blog website, not my actual ministries page, but this is my blog website, and it's sacredministries.org, and you can go click on that. There's a home page, and it has an encouraging scripture. Then it tells what it's about, contact, and then the last page, it says blog, and you click on that page, and it takes you to the blog page, and you just read away.
All right. Well, I'm pulling it up now.
That's cool.
Oh, that's a nice-looking blog there. I like that. Well, we will start touting, getting you some funds. It's a worthy cause. And, Padre, by the way, aside from sending that banner to Bing, send it to me as well, because I'll be launching within the next week or two. Conservative Nation Radio's finally got its own domain, and we'll be launching my own website. So I want to put your banner on my website with a link back to your website so that I can also ask for donations on your behalf.
All righty, sir.
So that we'll get them right back to you. Padre, let's bring in our brother from California here, Scott O. Brother Scott, what's going on?
Hey, guy. Great conversation. You know, in the 80s and around the 80s, Phil Donahue had a show, and if you watched it long enough, you saw a pattern. And this goes right back to what Kirk was talking about. Anytime somebody tried to bring God into the discussion on the Phil Donahue show, he shut it up very quickly. He made fun of it.
Blasphemy.
He was arrogant about it. That was not because Phil Donahue just doesn't like religion. That's because Phil Donahue understands, and the left understands this, they're not ignorant to this, that when you bring God into the discussion, when you bring the Creator into the discussion, it solves the conflict. Now, you know, we fight this on a daily basis because the far left knows this. That's why they take God out of everything they can. I've been studying and preaching and teaching the Old Testament for almost 30 years now. And so I want to go to the Old Testament for a minute, and I think it ties in everything right back together, including, Michael, what you're going through right now. And as you look through that Old Testament, as you follow the story of the Hebrews, of the family of Abraham, as they trudge on towards Christ, it is designed to be a picture of Christ, the Word, and His church, and it's designed to show a pattern of the human nature of man. And without going into a lot of stories to point this out, you can just look at the period of the judges to see a pattern. And the pattern is this. When God is there and everything is good, man forgets about God. And when man forgets about God, things start to fall apart. And pretty soon the Israelites would find themselves underneath oppression. And as soon as they got into their oppression, what they did at that point was they said, oh, remember the time when God was taking care of us? And so they went back to God. And when they called out to God, God took care of them and put them back into a peaceful time for 20, 40, 60 years. And then they went right back into the same cycle. That was the cycle of man throughout history, and it was the cycle of us on our individuals. Why do I say that? We have a lot of social issues that we try and deal with and on these things that we're talking about that we fight with the far left, and we have to put some blame on us. The conservative Christians have to put a big, huge heap of blame on us because we haven't been fighting the battle. We didn't say anything about men and women living together in sin. for 30 years. But when a man and a man live together in sin, that's a problem. And I agree. I totally agree. But we've lost our moral authority to say anything about homosexuality because we left it a long time ago on people being married before they have sex, before they have children. We don't talk about that. Christ gave us one last commandment on this earth. He says, go ye therefore into all the world and preach the gospel. As long as the Christians are not studying for themselves, don't just listen to the guy down the street, that got even trouble, studying for themselves so that they can take their knowledge and go out and share their Christianity, we will never be the salt of the earth. The Christians in this country are supposed to be the salt of this nation. We are supposed to be preserving, but we're not doing it, you see. We go about everything backwards. We try and bring people into our churches by entertainment instead of doing it the hard way, which is study and go out and teach them what God wants them to do. Because if we will instill God and religion and prayer back into this country, we are going to fix this country. But we're going about it wrong. We're not supposed to be trying to shove it into the schools, and I believe it should be in the schools. Don't get me wrong. But we're supposed to be individually going out and teaching. And when we do, we will reach the black community, and they will start to understand that the Republican conservative right is based on the Creator. That's where the foundation is. The majority of them are moral that way in the first place. The ones that are in poverty, when they start seeing us acting like Christians instead of just talking about it, they're going to listen to what we have to say. And they won't give up on Christianity so much easy. You know, on Thursdays we talk about Fredon Miller, and last week I pointed out that one of the side effects of this is the people in the community of Hurley, their children, when they find out how corrupt their local government is, what a bad thing. Same thing with the Christians. We take a lot of abuse, but we earn some of our abuse too, because a lot of us do. We're not getting in and doing what we're supposed to do, and that's how we're supposed to heal this. That's how we're supposed to bring this back. This should all be based in prayer. We all have certain things we agree on social issues and economic issues and all kinds of things, national security issues. But our foundation's got to be in prayer. Our foundation's got to be in us doing something about our Christianity instead of just letting the Bible sit on the coffee table. And when we as Christians start doing that, we'll start pushing back on abortion. Because that's how we beat that's how we win on abortion. We don't win on abortion by fighting it in the courts. That's the left way of doing it. We win on abortion by teaching our neighbors Christianity and faith in God, and the fact that that Bible is a roadmap to living a good life and a content life, not solving the problems, but showing you how to accept the problems and how to deal with the problems and how to live with the problems and how to use those problems to make you grow. You know, Michael, the Apostle Paul felt the exact same way you do in Corinthians. And he had a problem that he dealt with, and he was just frustrated. And he said he asked Christ three times, take it away. Just take it away. I give up. It's basically what Paul was saying. And Christ said, my grace is sufficient. And we as the right, the Christian right, and we're all very strong believers that are connected to this show. I know because I've discussed faith with all of you, or most of you, I should say. I've heard some of you discuss faith. But if we don't go out and do that, if we don't get out and do this the right way, we can't do it through the legal system. We're never going to make it that way. That's the way the left fights. Now, do we give up that fight in the legal system? No, we don't give it up. We don't give it up. But we better be fighting the way Christ said to fight. See, he said, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, render unto God what is God. And then he kept going and teaching the poor people how to have a happier life. And that it's based on the word. And it's based on his body and his blood and his sacrifice. And when we as Christians on the left quit just throwing our Christianity around and start actually putting it into action, we are going to find out how powerful we are. But if we continue to just fight it in legislation, we're going to lose. And if we don't put the word at the center of our lives, we know what happens to our country. Because you guys are right. You take God out of it, the whole thing falls apart. You take the husband out of the family unit, it all falls apart. You take God out of public, you take God out of our heart, it all falls apart. There's my rant. Back.
And Scott, that was a good one. You want to know? You know,
beautiful, man. Beautiful.
Not only did you nail it, but, you know, for the last year now, well, since I basically met you, Scott, and Scott Whitting, and Teresa, and Danny, and, Brother Shouse, and everybody that I met when I jumped on board with Team Kane. You know, it was from that point on that when I started my Sunday shows, and this is a horrible, horrible excuse, and but I'm texting my mom right now. My mom's going to Ohio to bring my baby sister back from Ohio and move her back down here. And, you know, starting next Sunday, for a year now, I've been to church all of three times because I've always woke up. I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, make my coffee, and I start writing my editorial and preparing for the show. I just need to start doing that on Saturdays, and I need to make myself go back to church. I think I'd feel a lot better.
And you know what, you've got the key to it, my friend. It's got to be a daily life, and we follow the same pattern as the judges. That's why I point that out. Not only do we do that as individuals in society, we do that in our lives during the timeline of our lives. I've gotten myself into some messes in my lifetime, and there are always the times when I forget about God. When I'm not going to church three times a week, I start to get weak. That's why I go three times a week. And I'm not saying everybody has to go three times a week, but that's my threshold when I get weak. When I'm not studying, that's when I get weak. And we need to have the power of God in our lives through that word, if for no other reason than to keep us pumped, Michael, so we don't end up being exasperated and have to and be ready to quit. And
yeah.
Man and my brother, you get yourself in there and enjoy it and worship God. And everybody, get into that Bible and make sure you know that what you're doing is what's in there. Because there's a lot of different faiths out there, a lot of different beliefs. But God only gave us one Bible. And just make sure you're not relying on somebody else for the foundation of it. Read it for yourself. That's where the power is. Don't even just sit and listen all day to somebody else preach it. It's important, the part where you open it up yourself, read it for yourself. So, amen, brother. And, you know, and you will continue to be in my prayers, along with everybody else. Teresa knows she's daily in my prayers. We're all working hard. We're all going to be exhausted. And we all have to go to the end of a campaign. We did it with Kane, and we just did it with Zach. You see it, and you're exhausted. But we can keep coming on if we make sure we've got Christ in our blood. And his blood in our
life. Absolutely, brother. Well, let's bring on Bing. Let's bring on Rick here. Let him say a few things, and then we'll start doing our. We'll go through starting with Padre and do a, you know, let everybody have a minute or two or. Well, I tell you what. We'll let everybody have 3 minutes for closing remarks and start bring. I've got a family to spend an evening with this evening, so we're going to bring the show down a little bit early tonight. Mm-hmm. I just feel like I need to do that. I put a lot of stuff off the last year. I need to spend some time doing something with my family tonight. So, Brother Rick, come on in here.
Quality time, man.
Yeah, definitely quality time. And, I mean, I was just enjoying the conversation and what Scott said, I mean, there's just no way of putting it up. And, you know, he mentioned my favorite verse, which is 2 Corinthians 12:9. You know, and I've been using that a lot, you know, because of my disability. You know, and also there was a Christian minister named David Ring who also uses that. And it goes on to further say in verse 10, therefore, I am well content with weaknesses, with insults, with distresses, with persecutions, with difficulties, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. And, I mean...
There you go, brother.
I mean, like, Michael, I mean, in the past year that I've known you, I mean, you have basically been a rock. I mean, there's just no other way to put it.
Well, I thank you. I appreciate that. It makes me feel good. But we've all been rocks. It's been all of us. You know, I lean on you guys heavily. I lean on all of you. When I say guys, I mean that in the non, you know, I lean on Teresa and Becca and you and I lean on and the Scots. I mean, it's all of us, man. It's all of us. You guys have been my strength. You know, it's like I'm ashamed to say, I really have since the last year.
Mm-hmm.
I have, and my wife gets on me. She says, "Honey, you need to go to church with us." I'm like, "Honey, right now I'm fighting the battle for God, for our country." And, you know, that's a poor excuse on my part. Scott is right, and Padre's right. That's as important as it is, it's a poor excuse, and I need to take my lazy butt back to church and get back to where I was before a year ago when I went to every Sunday and listen to the priest of, you know, I'm an Anglican. Or what some folks call Episcopalian, though we've split from the Episcopalian Church. We're Anglican now, but you know, yeah, I do. I think I'll feel a lot better. But anyway, go ahead.
I mean, like Michael. I mean, you know, what you had said earlier about just throwing your hands up and just. You know, just saying, you know, just let them in. I mean, I felt that way at times, but then I think, you know, if they win, then we'll be just like Soviet Russia. You know, we'll be like the Soviet bloc, where they had no rights. I mean, I had heard a story, and this is a while back. In a Russian school, two guards came in. One had held a Bible, and he threw the Bible on the ground, told everybody to spit on the Bible, or else they would be blown to death. One kid came around, spat on the Bible. Other kid spat on the Bible. One girl got in. She looked at the Bible, knelt down, picked it up, and, you know, wiped the spit off and kissed it. Her head got blown off. I mean, you know, I mean, if we don't win in November, that's how it's going to be.
Well, yeah, a lot of us will be going underground. I know that. And all that is necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very true. When good men do nothing, we don't vote the way we should.
Mm-hmm.
We don't participate the way we should. Like Michael said, you know, I'm guilty of that too. I should go to church more often, you know. I'm Southern Baptist, so they're always over here.
Now I consider myself spiritual But the last church that I had gone to was the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and the reason why I say I'm spiritual is because, I mean, I've been to many churches. I mean, I was raised Catholic up in Chicago, came down to Florida, became Baptist, then non-denominational, then I was one of the religions I don't know of, and I was also a Jehovah's Witness before I studied with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And, I mean, I'm like, I read the Bible now and then, you know, I pray. Every now and then I watch church on the computer, but I mean, you know, I mean, basically, it's just a relationship between you and God and nothing else.
That's absolutely right.
Well, maybe it's the time. Maybe it's a time for us to get on Padre's show tomorrow.
This evening. In fact, speaking of the Padre, let's bring him on and give him some closing time. Thank you, Brother Rick. Padre, come on in here and take whatever time you need. Closing remarks. Give yourself a plug on your shows tonight. And thank you. I want to thank you personally, first of all, for being in my life. You know, I remember back when you first called into my show almost a year ago, Padre. And you know what? It's been a long time since you've done it. When do you have to get off for your show tonight?
I changed the time to 7.
Okay, so we've got a little bit of time because it's been a while, and I'd like to ask you to give us a closing prayer tonight, Padre. But go ahead and give us some.
I was going
to
ask him that too. Great minds think alike, man.
Jinx, go ahead and give us some closing remarks, Padre. Take your time.
Alrighty. Well, I was just sitting here listening, and I just want to add a little caveat to what Rick just said. And oh, by the way, I just published my new Sacred Ministries Facebook page. So, you know, hopefully I'll get like a whole bunch of likes in the next hour or so, because Miss Teresa and Mr. Schaus and you, Michael, are going to start spreading it on Facebook.
What is it on Facebook, Padre?
It's sacredministries.org. I think you can type that in. It just got published. Literally just got published.
Sacred Ministries Peace Village chapter?
Nope. Let me see if I can
find it. It's the link he gave before.
Yeah, it's let me see, Sacred Ministry, Reality in Christ Ministry. You have to go down to Reality in Christ. Let's see. Now I have to type in Sacred Ministries. It's associated with my page, but I guess I did something wrong. I don't know. I published it, but,
I just shared it, man. You're all right.
Did you find it? Right. Not the website. I created a new Facebook page, a brand new Facebook page.
Okay, I didn't find that, but.
Well, I'm on your Facebook page, Padre.
And I connected it through Reality in Christ Ministries. Oh well, I lost it.
Well, you get it when you get it. If you would please, Padre, post it on my wall, and I'll get it out.
Alrighty. Well, anyway, so and what Rick was saying about how, you know, our relationship with is just a relationship with God, and that's all. There's so much more than that. It's actually so much more than that, because of the fact that I could tell you story after story of times where I prayed when it was raining, or storming, and I just pray, it's like, Lord, in the name of Jesus, rain stop. And it did. Oh, you're just saying that. No, I'm not. Because, see, what I've been through in my testimony, and this is what Sacred Ministries is about, I have been brought through things by the Lord that would defy all logic. But fortunately, we have a relationship with a Lord that transcends everything beyond logic. He's a loving and a faithful God. And we need to understand that a lot of things that go on in America. Whoa. Okay, little side note. Obama hosts Ramadan dinner, says America needs more Muslim Brotherhood offspring. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Anyway.
Where was that at?
Oh, it was on a tweet. Washington, D.C. Tea Party.
Oh, okay.
So, anyway, that's just one of those, for real, though. Whatever happens negatively in this country will be because
believers in Jesus Christ allowed it. Satan can't do anything in this country that we don't allow him to do. But unfortunately, we have a lot of people, even believers, who have a hard time acknowledging that the power of God is still at work in the world today. Because we look at the level of evil that's, you know, that's being perpetuated throughout the world, and we think, man, we don't stand a chance. And that's not the case. I can't put it into words. I cannot describe to you what God has brought me through. But I can tell you this. It's as real as the power on the other side. And this is what's so crazy to me. How is it that we as believers, we can acknowledge, oh my goodness, evil. Look at the power of Satan at work. Blah, 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 blah. But yet we deny the power of the Holy Spirit because, oh, I don't believe in that spooky stuff because it's crazy. I don't get it. And when I hear that, it breaks my heart because what those individuals who believe that are saying is that your life wasn't a miracle. You just got lucky to survive. And those individuals who think like that never walked a day in my shoe. Almost two young teenage boys when I was a little kid tried to beat me to death. Another individual, as a joke, was holding me by one leg over a three-story balcony. I was a kid. And many, many other evil things that was done to me. But it was by the grace of God, His love, His grace, and His mercy that allowed me to come through that. It was His love. He protected me. And His love and His protection isn't just limited to me. It's for everyone. But we just have to make the decision that we're going to open and embrace it. Matthew 11:28, just to paraphrase it because I don't have my Bible in front of me. Jesus said, come unto me, all ye who are burdened and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take up my yoke, for my burdens are light and few. And basically, in a nutshell, what Jesus was saying there is that trade places with me. Give me your issues and your situation. Yes, He was saying that before He was crucified, but you know what? He still hasn't changed His mind. We still are able to make a difference. Now, could you imagine how much more effective if we actually mixed prayer with the other things that we're doing to fight and save our country? Prayer plus the other things equal victory. God's not done with this nation. God's not done with this nation. But He cannot do anything unless those vessels of His, Christians, believers, choose to step up and say, here we are, Lord, use us. And this message is directed to those who call themselves, you know, who are professing believers. Now, if there's people and, you know, and listening who are not believers, then this doesn't pertain to you. But just know this, God still loves you anyway, regardless of how you feel. He still loves you. He still sent His Son Jesus to die for you because He's no respecter of persons and He didn't leave you out.
So. Well, you know, Padre, what I say, people ask about believing in God. No, they'll say something about it, and I'll look at them and I'll say, well, prove to me the existence of electricity. They'll say, well, I can turn on a light switch and show you that there's electricity there. Or I can stick my finger in the socket and get electrocuted and show you and prove to you there's electricity there. And I'm like, well, how do you know that turning on that light switch or sticking your finger in that light socket is not the same feeling I get from a belief, from my belief in God?
That's good. That is
See,
good.
There's no theory in electricity. I mean, I'm an engineer. There's a theory, and that's about it. I mean, we know how it works, but we don't really. We can't see it.
You can't see it. You can't see it.
You can't hold it. You can't touch it. I guess.
Well, you can touch it. It just wouldn't feel good. That's all.
All you're seeing is what it causes. The cause. The reaction from it. Well, and that's my whole point.
Right.
So, hey, Padre, hang tight, Padre, and let me go ahead and bring Boyd in here for final remarks. Go ahead, Bing, real quick.
I was going to say it's the same thing like touching your hand on a stove, you know. You can tell a kid all day long, and they won't listen to you until they do it.
Exactly.
And they have to do it because they won't understand that that stove is hot. When it's on.
It's one of the best lessons in life for a kid.
Yeah,
and all four of mine have been through it.
That's a good one. Yeah, mine too, man. Six. So,
Brother Boyd, come on in. Give us 2-3 minutes of closing remarks. Or whatever time you need.
Well, if we all do that, you're going to be right on time to close the show.
Well, that's why I started early today.
Yeah, this has been a really great show, great discussion. Some of the things that were talked about were very poignant in my life as a recovering alcoholic and an addict. You know, Rick is spiritual. He doesn't belong to a denomination or a church per se, as I am. There are things that in the church are just kind of lacking for me on a personal level. But yet I have my own chats with God or my higher power, however you wish to think of it. And to go back to some of the things that were said to you, Michael, when you had your little
breakdown.
Your little breakdown, I guess you could say, call it that.
His moment.
You know, yeah, his moment.
I don't have those very often, but yeah. God knows I had one today.
Well, you know, in my recovery and stuff like that, and I'm talking AA and NA, you know, people get sponsored by those who have been there for a while. And as a sponsor, you know, you're supposed to help bring them along and teach them the ways and everything. Well, I had to get to the point where, as a sponsor, I would not push my stuff on my sponsee. No way. However, if they wanted to take it, they could have it. But I wasn't going to tell them this is how you have to do it. You know, it's like when you're in a situation like that, the best you can do, you know, somebody down in a hole or something like that, and you're going to help them get out. You know, you can reach your hand out to that person or group or whatever to give them a hand out. Now, while your hand is down there, ready to help them out, their first step is that they have to reach up and take your hand. If they don't reach out and take your hand, there is nothing you can do. You can't save them. You can't help them. You know, you've gone as far as you can go. And, you know, times you just have to walk away because they're not going to reach up to help themselves. Well, maybe the next person who happens to wander by that hole will do it. But in the meantime, you know, you have your own self that you have to take care of. Because if you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of anybody else. And, you know, I'm sitting back here thinking, you know, you want to end the show early and take some quality time with your family. Great. You know, I remember the other week you took vacation with your family down to San Antonio, kind of on a vacation, but it was a working vacation. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a vacation. So my suggestion to you there, my friend, is to pack up your family when you get the next chance. Head to the beach or head out into the boonies. And for God's sakes, leave your phone behind. Leave your computer behind and go out and just enjoy it while you can. Go out, become refreshed. Go out and be the Michael that I know your wife married. I know that you fathered your children. And go return for a little R&R. Take a break.
Yeah, you can come up here, Michael.
Thank you, Brother Boyd. I appreciate that. I really do, my brother. And you know what? I will be up there this spring break, I hope.
Yeah. Don't be going over to Brother Bang's, because you guys, I know you. You won't get your
break. What are you saying?
Working vacation there.
Oh, he'll
friend.
Get a break over here, brother.
I see a trip coming up to East Texas. There's a little park down there, down where my family, when they came from Tennessee, actually in 1839 to Texas, moved to out in East Texas in Cherokee County, which at the time was still a part of Nacogdoches County, but down there south of Rusk, named after Thomas J. Rusk, is a little park with an old 1880s steam train that my youngest boy, Ian, my boy loves trains. He loves them. He'll stand out on a track and he looks down the tracks, and sometimes I wonder, what is he looking at? And I think he's just looking at his future. And I don't think either one of us knows what it is, but I think he's looking at his future when he looks down those tracks. And we live out here in Hazlet, which is north of Fort Worth. And it's a way station for BNSF. And so the trains park out here quite a lot. And there's a way station on the edge of my neighborhood, where a train yard, if you will. And we'll drive. When I'm heading to my Masonic Lodge, I'm a Freemason. When I'm heading to Lodge, that's the way I go. And it takes me out John Day Road up to 114. It's just a nice little country drive. And he'll say, "Daddy, let's roll down the window so I can smell that clean train air."
Yeah.
Now, I'm wanting to smell the cow manure, and he's wanting to smell the clean train air.
No worries in the world, man. That's how kids are supposed to be.
That's my 7-year-old.
Supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's 7-year-old right there.
Well. Yeah, every 7-year-old wanted to be someplace. I wanted to be at an airport.
There you be. Well, hang on, Boyd. Let's bring Kurt on here. Kurt, take a few minutes. Closing remarks.
Okay, this is going to be kind of quick, Michael, because I got to hit the road. But I wanted to, you know,
what you had a while ago, I listened real close to this. Michael, that was just a human moment, okay? We all have them. I've had bunches of them, and I dare say everybody else on here. So I don't see you as having a breakdown. You had a human moment, brother. So just go with it and recharge your batteries, and everything will be all right, okay? The two other people I want to say, I mean, everybody on here, I think you know where I'm coming from in our relationship. Some of you I've never seen. Most of you I've never seen, but I know you. But today, especially to the Padre, well, what's Padre's name?
It's Thomas Smith, and he's still on with
Thomas.
Us.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
Sir.
Thomas, I wanted to call you by name, brother. Today, Brother Thomas and Brother Scott, fill my cup back up, okay? I mean, you filled my cup back up.
Yep, it's just Brother Scott and Brother Thomas did that to me, too.
And anyway, I got to run. Y'all have a great rest of the day, and we'll see you next week.
All right, Brother Kirk, thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk to you later. All right, guys. Well, let's call it a day. I've got a roast going and some carrots and potatoes, a typical Southern Sunday meal. And
man,
oh,
I have a fork.
There's nothing better in this world. You take your this is my grandmother taught me how to cook this. My grandmother, she grew up on a sharecropper's farm down in Georgetown, Texas. And, I mean, this lady was dead-eyed dick. You could hand her – you could hand her a 22 from 200 feet off, and she'd hit a chicken with twin eyes. We always called her dead-eyed dick. And,
that's actually a sad breakfast sandwich, too.
Yeah, well, you know, my grandmother, and you know, I go feed her every other Sunday, or Saturday. I trade with my mom. I try to anyway, and because mom takes care of her during the week. My grandfather's getting on up in age. We probably need to get him in there with her, but I mean, these are the folks that raised me, and they taught me so much. You know, it was funny. I was taking my drive today, and among all the things I was thinking about my grandfather, and I was thinking about the first time he put a gun in my hands. I was 8 years old, and he put a 410. It was a Stevens break open model, single shot 410 that belonged to my great grandfather. And this is a long, interesting story. I'll share it with y'all on another show in the hill country of Texas, but I was about 8 years old. We had some squirrels up in the attic and at my great-grandmother's house out on Lake Travis, which is north of Austin, and we had to get rid of those. Well, he could have just as easily went up and taken care of the pest himself. But you know what my grandfather did, guys? And you're all on open mic. He handed me the 410, and he made me crawl up in that attic and take care of them myself. And I don't think the lesson was about learning how to kill another living creature. I think the lesson was learning how to be a man and how to take care of business when you need to take care of it. And we had a healthy respect for guns in my family, a very healthy respect. There was, when I was growing up, there was at least two guns in every room of my house that I grew up in. And I never once touched them. If I touched them, it was when my grandfather said I could, or if we were going out to go hunting or shooting or whatever. But other than that, I didn't shoot them. I didn't touch them. I didn't, you know, I understood what they were for. I don't know where I'm going with this, and I don't even know why I had that thought about my grandfather, except I guess my grandmother. And thinking about that roast, my grandmother, you know, she was, she always told me a story about taking... She made it to the sixth grade, and my great-grandmother would send her to school with chicken fried in between a biscuit. And the other kids with the store-bought bread, that would have the store-bought bread, would want to trade her for those homemade biscuits and that fried chicken.
Oh, hell yeah, man. I know that. I know that. And it, yeah, they would.
So I don't know what my point is. I guess I'm just trying to say I miss the America that I grew up in, or that I lived in up until probably, I guess, the 70s or 80s when I was in the service. I don't know. It started changing then. But I miss the America that... Oh, we're not the same, guys, and we got to fight. You know, I had a little moment,
yeah, we do.
And I broke down a little bit. But Padre and Brother Bing and Brother Boyd and Brother Kurt and Sister Teresa and everybody gave me some inspiring words. And, you know, I'm sorry I probably said a word or two I shouldn't have said online or on air, and I apologize. I'm just a, you know,
you're
I'm just
human.
I'm a human, and I'm a redneck. You know, I'm a good-hearted, loving, speak my mind kind of good old Texas boy. That's just what I am, and I'm not embarrassed or ashamed to say that anymore. I'll tell you one thing:
well,
I'm not a racist, and I'll never let anybody ever call me a racist again. And I think that's what's gotten me down the most. I think that's what gets me the most is when these people on the left try to make me feel bad and call me a racist, because I believe that people need to take a little bit of personal responsibility. If you need a little bit of help, we're going to help you. But,
Michael?
Yeah, go ahead.
You know what you got to do, start doing?
What is that, Padre?
You need to start carrying a little handheld pocket mirror. So every time a liberal family member or somebody you know calls you a racist, you pull out your pocket mirror, you show them their reflection and say, there's your racist right there.
I love it, Padre.
That's a good one. That's a good one, man.
That's what I'm going to do. Well, guys, listen. Let's go ahead and call it an evening. We're down to 22 minutes. I know we could probably kill it, but I got some things I want to do. I need to go put some dirt back on top of this fence post, and I'd like to go up to the pool and meet up with my family and spend some little time with them at the pool. But thank
That's
you,
cool
Paul.
Name, man.
You know, Brother Bing, you know I love you, my brother. Brother Padre Smith, you know how I feel about you, my brother. Rick and Sister Teresa, what's in there that's left in the chat room. It's been a great day. Brother Bing, we got a couple of guests lined up for next week.
Yes, sir, man. We got Lisa May Norton from Big Dog Music Mafia on next week. And a surprise guest, perhaps.
Right. And I happen to know that surprise guest might be, and I'm really excited.
Yeah,
oh,
Michael knows who the surprise guest might be. I don't know if it's going to be him, her, or the publicist or whatever, but yeah, it's going to be a cool show. Lisa May, I've met her before. She's a very cool woman. She just speaks her mind. She don't care what you think about her, you know. And yeah, it'll be a cool show next week. Tune in. And
Brother Michael? I watch Bing gravel in the dirt for that.
Everything going up in Alaska, by the way, Boyd?
They're pretty good. I haven't been paying much close attention to the stuff here locally. We got primaries coming up on the 28th. And I haven't got myself educated enough to see the new districts and where I'm sitting and stuff. But I do know that I do know how I'm going to vote. You know, we got a couple propositions that better go down, or we're going to be a hurt unit up here. And other than that, all I've been doing is paying my Obama taxes.
I hear you, brother. I hear you.
Yeah. Well, you just have to be informed. I mean, it's tough, man. It's hard, you know. I mean, it's not easy being cheesy, you know. I mean, There's a lot of politicians and so on and that kind of thing, and you have to stick up for what's right, you know. And I always said, you know, in the primaries, you got to vote your conscience. In the general, you know, you have to vote who you want to get out of office. And we've got to get this guy out of office right now.
Yep. Well, you know, it takes no cojones to be a liberal and to be for everything, and it takes no cojones to be an independent and say, I'm just going to sit back and I'll make the choice after you guys do all the work in the primaries. You know, there's no honor in that. There's honor in what we do, whether you're on our side or the other side. You know, I disagree with them, but the grassroots on the left, you know, they feel the same way we do, just from a different perspective. So I'll have to hand it to the grassroots, be it left or right. I hope our side wins, but, you know, we are what gives the independents something to vote for. And, you know,
exactly.
I think I can't stand the independents more than I hate the Democrats. A fence center to me. I just can't stand a fence center.
Alka-Seltzer or something, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Mm. Yeah.
Well,
one thing that I have.
There was one other thing I wanted to add to this. I have a little bone to pick with Brother Rick there.
Hey, you got about 600 bones to pick.
Brother Rick, Brother Rick got me addicted to a bunch of Young Turks over at OTNN. Yeah, keep giggling there, feller.
Did you hear that evil little laugh, boy?
Yeah, I know. I heard that. And you know, it's funny to sit there and listen to them, Michael, because those guys are working themselves into a tizzy over the election and everything else. And, you know, they're going to end up, each and every one of them are going to end up having a breakdown. It won't be soon, because, like I said, they're all young Kirk. I think when I get online over there, I'm the oldest person online over there.
Yeah.
You know, on that Skype call and stuff.
Yeah, well,
you're the fattest person. I know that.
Hey, Brother Bing.
Oh.
Yes.
Just let me sit on that skinny little lap of yours.
Hey, Bing.
Right,
and if I'm not mistaken, you had a wonderful time talking to Titan.
Yeah, that was great. I mean, I had a good time. The guy is very off the wall, I got to say. You know?
Anyway.
Brother,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Hey, I was going to say something else, but it's not worth your time missing with your family. So,
go
on.
Just say it while I go see who keeps pounding my doorbell. I'll be right back.
Anyway, you know, it was... last night or the night before, they brought up questions of how is the Tea Party folks going to react to Ryan and to Romney and stuff, and where's the Tea Party in this mix?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I didn't get a chance to pop in there because they were all pontificating on what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like, where's the Tea Party? Well, I get emails from a ton of Tea Parties and stuff. Well, the Tea Party out there is not into this presidential election. And the reason why it's not in the presidential election is because our team has been laid out. We know where we're going to vote. The Tea Party's out there right now. They're out there fighting for the people to go into Congress to support the team that the Republicans have put up.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's where the Tea Party efforts is. And I didn't get a chance to tell those folks to take a look and see what the Tea Party is doing. You know, it's not about Romney now. It's not about Ryan. The team has been picked. You know, we all know that we're going to vote for Romney and Ryan because that's what we got. Whether we like him or not, that's what we have to do. And the other thing is that the Tea Party is the one that's out there going to make things happen in the Congress.
Yeah, it's a local level issue, you know.
Yep.
In a lot of respects.
All right, guys.
The presidential race is really nothing. That's a no brainer. It's a local level that is the brainer.
Yep.
All right, well, Brother Boyd, we'll see you next Sunday.
You betcha.
All right, hang tight. We're going to close this down. Padre, go ahead and give us a, if you would please, Padre, would you give us a closing word?
Absolutely. You mean a closing word of prayer? Because I'll already give my closing word.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Please.
Dear Heavenly Father, in the mighty name of Jesus Christ, Lord, we thank you for this opportunity to be able to gather on this show and be able to fellowship. Lord God, I just ask you that over the course of this next week, Lord God, that you would just strengthen and hold close to your heart, Lord God, each and every listener within a sound of my voice, Lord God. Father, I just pray that you will strengthen them and that you will continue to grant your love, your grace, favor, and mercy upon each and every one of their lives. We give you glory, honor, and praise in the mighty name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Amen, brother.
Amen.
Thank you, Padre. Brother Bing, give me a,
yes.
If you got a, just a closing couple of minutes there, and then I got a little special guest here that wants to say something.
I don't really have nothing to say, Michael, other than, you know, I'm really getting jonesed on doing this, you know, and, you know, I appreciate, you know, all the people I've met. I appreciate, you know, what God's given me. And I just want to tell y'all to take care. Be good. Take care.
Because well, thank you, Brother Bing. And you know what? I am so glad you and I are partners. I really am. Man, I think you bring a lot to the show, and we're building something good here, brother. Between traditionalamericanmovement.com and what we're doing on Conservative Nation Radios, we're doing God's work.
I hope so. And also, next week, Lisa Mae Norton, man, that's going to be a good show. I'm telling you.
Absolutely.
I'm just telling.
And let's close out with just a small hint of what might could be. And before we do that, Brother Bing, my little buddy here, Ian, I'm going to let him close out the show and tell everybody to have a great week and tell them that we love everybody.
Have a great week.
Say, have a great week.
You
son.
Have a great week, too.
And we love you all from Patriot Studios.
And we love you all from Patriot Studios.
You guys have a great week.
We love you, too.
Bye.
Take care.
When I look around, what do I see? Most beautiful man, I'm seeing a shining sea. Every man, woman, child can be who he wanna be, pursuing happiness, living the American dream. It's plain to see, you ain't got to ask me. You know what colors I play. wants I meet. From the waitress at the diner to the kids playing down the street. To all of our servicemen, thank you for keeping us free. Life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. Hell yeah, we're living free. It's plain to see. You ain't got to ask me. You know what, girl?